oncology, cancer. We don't have a PowerPoint, but that's okay, because you all have the slides, right? No PowerPoint. Oh, I think we can exist low-tech for one lecture.
Yeah, maybe
you
get a sticky.
No. Are you a stick? Yeah, that's what they do when they come in. They don't push it into the room. Sorry, I'm not a stick. We can do this. We don't need the screen at all times. You download them, you have them in front of you, right? The one day he didn't download his slide.
No, I actually downloaded it.
Good, then you're set to go. Oh, you probably need your... Do you need your power cord back?
No.
Okay, we're cool, because I'm busy recording. All right. I'm sure that each one of us has been touched by cancer. Mm-hmm. Is there anyone who does not know anybody who has had or has cancer? Anyone who hasn't had any personal experience? No personal experience? That's absolutely very unusual, as you can see. You know, most all of us have had our lives touched by this disease. Most of us are lucky enough not to have had it ourselves, but certainly our family members, friends. That shows the prevalence of it, doesn't it? Cancer is now a chronic disease, which I think is most interesting. It's considered chronic, meaning it comes back, right? And you deal with it for a lifetime. Yes, me.
And now we know that we're born with cancer stem cells.
With cancer?
Stem cells.
Is that right?
Yeah.
For some cancers.
I don't know if that's
yeah, that's, there's a lot of research going on. Be really careful what you read, particularly in the popular press. Like my daughter called me and said, oh, Mom, you're so lucky, you'll never get breast cancer. Studies show that women who drink tea don't get breast cancer. They do these huge studies, and they do all the little intricacies of your lives, and they put them together, and I'm going, no, it doesn't make any sense. So they published that women who drink tea have like a 0% chance of getting breast cancer, right? No. As you move through and do your evidence-based project, you're going to get into some of the good literature, the real literature, the reports of nursing studies. And you certainly are welcome to go on Medline or any of the physician databases and look for medical-based studies. That's what we want you to base your knowledge on. Please not on the popular press. You may be very right, Mia. I'm not saying you're not. You could be most accurate. But be really careful what's reported to the public, because it gets extremely slanted, and these horrible rumors start. And I haven't heard that, but that could very well be true, that us were born with cancer. I know that many of us are born with a possibility or a familial tendency or, of course, a breast cancer gene. So in that case, yes. And yes, that would exist in the stem cell. So I know that would make sense for breast cancer, some kinds of colon cancer, certainly some genetic cancers. To universally say that, I think that's a bit of a leap, okay? At least in my book. So we've all been touched by this disease, haven't we? Pretty scary. Real scary. Now you're wondering, why are we studying med-surg? Why are we studying cancer in med-surg? Isn't this med-surg nursing? You will care for a cancer patient. If not this semester, absolutely in med-surg. There are certainly oncology nurses. I encourage you to go onto the Oncology Nursing Association's website. A lot of great information about oncology nurses. It's a fantastic field, growing. But it certainly is very much a part of medical surgical nursing. People come in with some strange symptoms and they don't know what it is, and we diagnose cancer. These are our patients on the floors. They come in for surgery. They're admitted to a surgical floor, not an oncology floor. Okay, so you're caring for them post-surgically. They're surgery risk for cancer. So they overlap a lot. I remember often as a med-surg nurse, I was floated to oncology because they're pretty close. Many of the chemotherapies and some of the treatments from cancer, you do as a nurse need treatments for cancer. As a nurse, you need some special certifications. So you know that there's a lot to being an oncology nurse. Now, the thing about nursing and oncology, there's a lot of
Yes.
Cancer survivors, huh? We're curing many, many, many people, the vast majority today. So that leaves people with living post-cancer, right? They have a lot of chronic conditions that are left over from their cancer experience. The cancer itself can be debilitating. The surgery can leave them with a colostomy, for example. Breast cancer survivors, I've done a lot of research on lymphedema and breast cancer survivors. So cancer survivorship is a huge thing. It doesn't really fall under the realm of medical practice. Because again, what do physicians do? They treat the disease. So where is the person without disease? Bless you. So where is the person without disease? Do they necessarily fall under the physician's practice? No, much more nursing. So what oncology nurses, a lot of what they're doing today is caring for cancer survivors that have many, many complications. I was talking to one cancer survivor, that said, I had no idea what survivorship was going to be like. That this would affect me, its treatment, and the acogenic effects would last the rest of my life. So it's an exciting part of nursing, so I encourage you to look into oncology nursing. It's very exciting. The bad news is we lose a lot of patients. People who have cancer generally die of cancer, eventually. The cancers come back, although you'll see in your med-surg rotations, you'll have patients that may have had cancer 3, 4, 5 times. But eventually a cancer will kill them. Most people die from either heart problems. If they make it through adolescence in their early 20s, in their childhood, of course, generally die of heart conditions or cancer. Those are your choices. That's pretty good. Those are your choices. Cancers will kill us. So a good half are going to die from cancer. So you do end up losing your patients. I managed just to kind of go quickly through this lecture because I'm very excited about our activity that happened. So the story is from the plant. But before we get to that, let's learn a little bit about cancer. Cancer is not a single disease. Please understand that. That's what I said to Mia when she made that statement that cancers are now in stem cells, all cancer comes from stem cells. Well, there are so many different kinds of cancers. To be able to make any gross generalization about cancer in general is it's pretty difficult. Okay? And as you know, it comes from normal cells that mutate into abnormal cells, right? And then there's all sorts of rapid division. The manifestations, meaning how your patient presents with cancer, are going to vary considerably depending upon where the cancer is. A brain cancer patient is going to present very differently than someone with melanoma, someone with breast, or someone with colorectal cancer. So it's a huge group of diseases, and please look at it like that. Benign neoplasms are localized growths. So we have tumors that aren't necessarily cancers. Please know that. There are masses in bodies that can be fatty tissue, that can be just squamous cells, that can be all sorts of things that aren't. My dog, for example, I was so nervous because she has these little fatty tumors, and so I took her in and he goes, I think it's just fatty tumors. What can you tell me? So he biopsied it, and I could watch he did. He took a syringe and just put it in the tumor and drew it up, and I could see all this fat. I'm like, okay, it's fat. And now she has a couple more, and I'm cool with it. So it's not uncommon for people to do that, too. There's lipomas that are fatty tumors. They are not cancerous at all. So please don't be concerned with every bump and problem that your patients have. A lot of them are just gross and are not malignant. They're benign. But there's a difference in how cancer cells grow. They grow aggressively. Okay, they don't respond to the body's homeostatic control. You know the word homeostasis? The body loves to maintain order, doesn't it? Likes to keep everything level. We compensate. Right? Cancer doesn't play by the rules. The cells grow rapidly. They invade other tissues, and they become malignant, which is the spread of cancers. Now, I don't know if this is in your lecture. Let me talk about it. Two basic kinds of malignant Does anybody know how tumor cells are transmitted throughout the body? It's a couple of different ways. Any guesses?
I mean, in the lymph nodes, yeah. Lymph and blood, mostly in lymph.
Right. And that's a malignant cell. So you can have, you might give an example? Is it with your comment? Exactly. And if it is in lymph nodes, where does it commonly go? Anywhere. Okay, once the malignancy becomes systemic, meaning in the lymph, commonly, it can do it, can be in the blood as well, it can go anywhere in the body. That's why it's so important to see that it's not in the lymph. And that's why we do a sentinel node biopsy. Anybody familiar with that phrase? Mm-hmm. Sentinel node biopsy? When am I? Yeah. Can I speak to them?
When I got into breast
then they go move on. Then we move on. So normally they take 1, 2, 3 nodes. If none of those nodes are affected, great. That's great. We consider it just because the cancer is confined to that tissue, that organ. It hasn't metastasized. Great. Okay. So we do a sentinel node biopsy. And we keep going out. At some point we decide if the node Okay, so that's one kind of malignancy. Another kind of malignancy is when the cancers move into an adjacent organ. That's called an invasion. Okay, so we have metastasis. Can you spell it right? Probably not. I can find anyone else. Okay, there we go, metastasis. A-S-T-A-S-I-S. Okay, metastasis is a primary term that means a cancer has moved to another area. One way it can do that is through the blood and lymph, right? Okay, that's termed metastasis, and that's a common term. There's a specialized term called invasion. And just by the nature of that word, what do you think that means?
Invasion.
Yeah, taking over what? Let's go back to your breast cancer patient. Where's a common? Do you know someone that had a malignancy and it invaded? There you go. Perfect example. Invasion, right? Because they're neighboring tissues. But that would be a specific kind of metastasis, which is termed invasion. Okay. So metastasis can pretty much be any kind. Very common in the lymph. Invasion is when it's an extra tissue. Some areas in the body rarely have primary. Oh, and you can difference between primary and secondary cancer. So your aunt, with the uterine cancer going to her ovarian to her uterus. Is that no? Ovarian to her bladder. Okay. The ovarian was the primary tumor, right? Primary cancer. It moved to the bladder. That was a secondary cancer, right? Secondary site of the cancer. Now, did she then have bladder cancer cells in her bladder? No, she had ovarian cancer cells in her bladder. Okay. I have a good friend that died from breast cancer of the brain. It's not uncommon for breast cancer patients because of the proximity to the spinal cord, to have the spinal cord invaded. Therefore, the central, the fluid in the spinal cord is invaded by breast cancer cells, carried to the brain, and where the breast cancer cells, there's still breast cancer cells, infected the brain, and she died of breast cancer of the brain. Got it? See how that works? So the primary cancer, those cells, no matter second, tertiary, whatever, if your body is riddled with cancer, it's still going to be from the primary cancer. We can't always know which cancer is the primary. We don't know. We don't test. I don't even know if there are tests for all the different kinds of cancer. If someone has cancer all over, there are times we don't know where it started. There are 10 trends. Like the liver rarely is a site of primary cancers. So we know. We know that from the ovaries to the bladder is pretty common. Prostate to the bladder is common. Breast to the spinal cord to the brain is common. So we kind of know the trends. But we often can't tell when someone is very rare with cancer. So this is a theory of cellular mutation. And that suggests that certain genes cause mutations in either cellular DNA and transform the cells into cancer cells. And there are three different stages that we're not going to go through. There's also the thought that normal cells are proto-oncogenes, okay? And they're abnormal genes that promote cell proliferation and cause the overgrowth. And I think this is maybe what Neil is referring to. And obviously, they decrease the body's immune system, any kind of cancer is going to do that. And then we do have tumor suppressor genes that block cell growth by suppressing the oncogenes. So our body has some ability to suppress cancers. And there are cancers that live in us that are suppressed for a very long time. There are quick-growing cancers and slow-growing cancers. Some that are very aggressive, and some that people live with for a lifetime, and they're never detected or they're never a problem, and they fail. So to kind of take cancer and put it into one big basket is tough. It's really tough. And this is the only lecture you're getting on cancer in your career here, so this is the only time we get to do this. What else? We know some carcinogens, right? What are some known carcinogens? Things that cause cancer. Smoking. Yeah, what else?
Environmental.
Yeah. Absolutely. But people that are around smoke sometimes never get cancer. Even smokers. And vice versa. Right? So it's not indefinite by any means. Some people just tend to be more prone. And some people have never smoked get lung cancer. Yeah.
So I was reading, and it talked about alcohol as a carcinogen.
Yeah.
It didn't say anything about alcohol being directly related to liver cancer or anything like that. It only said that it increases your chances of being around, like, tobacco use and stuff like that. So it basically only referred to, like, if you drink, you're going to, like, end up smoking a cigarette or something. Or, like, being in a smoking bar or whatnot.
Yeah, I think that's the... Well, no, you know why? It's because liver cancer of the liver, primary, it is extremely rare. So the liver is what becomes affected, right, by alcohol abuse, and it gets, people get cirrhosis, and that's usually what they get. They don't get cancer. But for some strange reason, the liver is a place and not a place of primary cancer. So if you're doing bad things to your liver, probably it doesn't mean you're going to get cancer. But if you're smoking, you do bad things to your lungs, your rates are higher. So it's just how that specific organ works and responds to the abuse.
That's true, because like my auntie, who was a cancer survivor, she had primary cancer was colon cancer, and it affected never actually
right, no, she probably has cirrhosis of the liver as well, but that's a completely different diagnosis. Exactly, good example. Okay, so other risk factors, of course, are heredity, age. As we age, cancer rate is higher. Heredity, there tends to be either genetic genes passed down, breast cancer genes, for example, some colorectal cancers, we've discovered a gene. Or simply familial. You don't have a gene, but you know it runs in a family. Anybody have any examples of that? Any cancer that exists? Not yet. What's your example?
Breast cancer.
But it's not the breast cancer gene.
Just the breast cancer.
Yeah, you may not have the diagnostic breast cancer gene, but you have a tendency. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Good. Good. Skin cancers for sure. And that's because of a lot, because of our genetic makeup, our white skin. Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah.
It's breast cancer too, but my doctor ordered me a genetic testing.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to wait for
Oh, you don't have to do a darn thing if you choose to go through.
Yeah.
And have you chosen?
I think it's all my dad and he's pushing me through it.
It's your choice.
Yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah.
What were you going to do with those results? That's the big question. Since we have that knowledge, we know that there's a breast cancer gene. Does she want to know? And if you know, what are you going to do? Anything? People do take drastic measures and have double mastectomies early because they find that they have the gene. That's not uncommon. So I don't know. Are you prepared to deal with that knowledge? Give it some real thought. And do some reading, you know, because there are lots of women in your situation that are like, talk, don't just go by what your dad says. He's not a woman. He doesn't have breasts.
Yeah, that's what I've been doing all the time.
I bet. I'm sorry that you have to have that burden on you, particularly right now. But you also know that there's no rush to get the test. You can table it until the semester break. I would suggest you just like put. That's one thing in nursing school. Sometimes we take things and we just say, I'm not going to cope right now. It's going to affect my education. I'll just put it over here and deal with it during the summer. Because it's not, nothing's going to change, either have it or not, and it's not going to change at this point. I would, that's what I would do. Put it away and cope with it over the summer. And then your father can just ask him to please be quiet about it. But please don't get into something.
No.
You better forgive and I'll make you really well. And do a lot of research. Talk to them and see what they're doing. Mm-hmm. You can find them online. That's wonderful. Okay, yeah, heredity. Age, we talked about that. Poverty, stress, diet, occupation. Infection, back aches, right? Migration, diabetes, skin exposure, system. So, what's our job as nurses, obviously? We make people aware of their potential risks. It would be interesting to watch how the nurses intervene with this group. It'll be fun for you to kind of watch the nurses work in this, if there isn't, if you'll have any counseling from the nurses. So some risk factors are controllable, right? And some are not. Obviously, you can't control your genetics. Age is a factor. About 77% of cancers occur after age 55. We talked about genes. Poverty puts a greater health risk. Because a lack of insurance and adequate access to health care. It doesn't mean that poor people get more cancer. Okay? It means that poor people don't get treated. So a poor person may have a small squamous cell, doesn't get treated, or find a small breast lump that could be very simply taken out. But they don't get treated, so it's a new doctor. Okay?
Where Marine has the highest breast
cancer percentage, but they have the
lowest
mortality rate for breast cancer. So. What do you think about that? Why do you think that might be? Yeah, what have we got here in Marine?
Money.
Money. We've also got a very highly educated group of women. I grew up here.
Professor Emory also said that
the
highest rate because of
the family there and the years. Well, that's an interesting concept. My personal opinion is that our rate isn't any higher than anybody else's. But Professor Emory and I can differ, which is all good because that's what academia is all about. You can differ that. Being a Marinite, I know what kind of women are here, and boy, there are assertive women who take care of themselves. They have the money to do it. Right? I don't live in that, by the way. I don't consider myself a Marine woman at all. And so I can
just grew up.
Yeah, no cancer rain, so she'll be done. So. Yeah, definitely, professors aren't generally not in that. But yeah, my thought is, I don't think we have any habits. But again, as I know, I can check that one. So lots of factors, right? Yeah, poverty, we talked about that, no health insurance. Stress is absolutely a factor. Fatigue. You sound like they know what they need. Dietary, yeah. The Irish don't eat a lot of fiber. They have a high rate of colorectal cancers. That's known. Occupational risks, obviously tobacco, obviously. And alcohol, yes, and your text says, as Hillary pointed out, the link between alcohol and tobacco. And alcoholics tend to have a poor immune system, eat poorly, all the other things that contribute to cancer. All the cancer of the liver is not real common as a primary. Recreational drugs, again, an unhealthy lifestyle. Okay, obesity.
Yeah.
Obesity has been linked to an increased risk of hormone-dependent cancers. Yes, can you guess why that is?
Yeah.
Why?
Because fat cells produce hormones.
No, fat cells store hormones. They do not produce them. Mm-hmm. But you're right. Good, close. Real close. Fat cells store hormones. Which is very interesting because you'll see the boys in the fat. They often have gonadotropin, which is breast, as they get into. They also, they have more estrogen in their bodies. They often, their secondary sexual characteristics are often delayed or smaller. They literally have smaller genitalia because of the amount of estrogen that's in their fat tissue. And, see, that case is wrong.
That's terrible.
It's true.
It's not terrible. I'm sorry. It's like a perspiration. It's so terrible.
Well, something to think about if you're on a study. You want to, don't want to overdo it. Right? Because they'll be storing estrogens, and that's not good. And it's
interesting.
Interesting, right? Well, we have to make the class fun. So, yes, so obesity has been linked to increased risk of hormone dependence. And that was just a little side that you're taking. So it is true. I hope the endocrinologist comes and we'll find out when you go somewhere else. So I have all this good information. And obviously, skin cancer is okay, so normal characteristics of a cell. We know that they're normal in size, right? They carry genetic information. We know what a normal cell looks like. Now, a malignant cell, they lost their ability to regulate the growth. Okay? They just go crazy. The changes are irreversible. In your normal cell, if you get, if I had developed going up those cables yesterday, if I did that much, I would certainly have calluses here. My gloves were shredded by the end of it. When I was going once, I said, now make sure you wear gloves. And oh yeah, I have my gloves. I had already put them aside. They're my older gardening gloves. When the fingers were out, that didn't matter. They were shredded. It just showed me that if I had done that 3 or 4 times, even in those ones, I would have had calluses. But normally, the calluses, what happens when you don't bother them anymore? You go away, right? Yeah, that's normal cells. That does not happen with calluses. Calluses will not reverse themselves. They tend to go crazy. So the changes are irreversible. There's altered cell structure. And there's metastasis, isn't there? Right? I'm trying to go through this rather quickly here, because I want to get to a good stuff. Obviously, with cancer, there's often a disruption of physical function, right? Physiologic function. Can you think of an example of where a cancer cell may upset physiological function? Any ideas on that one? Hillary read the chapter, yay! She's got all the information for us. Yeah, like what? Can you have an example?
Well,
if it crowds
the kidneys, then I don't know.
Keep looking, you'll find it. Matthew has a suggestion,
yes, sir. If you get prostate cancer, it's going to block your
urethra. Right? Is that where you're going to work? Yeah. Actually, yeah, and I've seen an open resection of the prostate. Fascinating surgery, if you haven't had the opportunity. Rarely is prostate cancer done with the resection. Rarely is it done with an open, meaning a sliced open abdomen anymore. Usually it's done with a TURP, transurethral resection of the prostate. Okay, which means what? Transurethral. What do we do? Through the girder, through the urethra, right? Resection, taking out of the prostate. So the prostate is actually cut up, soaked up, of the through the roof. Yeah, but much better than the whole open thing. But I have seen, I was privileged enough to see an open resection, and that's exactly what happened. The prostate, which normally is pretty small, looked like a big donut around the urethra and was squeezing it out. So a gentleman with this problem would have what? Trouble urinating. Yes, a perfect example. So yeah, cancers do upset normal physiological function. Absolutely. And another example? Hillary's still working on her, got it? No. Yeah, yeah, yeah. What else? Physiological problem.
Well, I don't know.
That's okay. We can talk.
But I was thinking about lung cancer affecting gas exchange.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Trying to figure out why is lung cancer so, why is the mortality rate so high?
It's an aggressive cancer. That's all.
Just the
as I said, there's like 250 different kinds of cancer. So then some of the extremely aggressive, the kind that hits the lungs, particularly of smokers, tends to be very aggressive.
Is it the nature of the tissue in the lungs?
It's the nature of the cancer. And maybe, very possibly. I don't know all the
it's a very kind of vascularized.
You think.
Yeah.
But maybe that's also why it's cancer.
That's why I was thinking.
And well, one example too is our lungs, the tissue, I imagine cellular turnover rate is pretty high. We could reach more. Yeah, 4 months, 6 months is about all you get. Yeah. And that's not enough. Right. So yes, but we sometimes do surgery, don't we? Palliative surgery on lung cancer victims to take out the tumors. Are we trying to cure the cancer? No, just palliative care to let them breathe better because the masses affect their breathing, and that's a horrible thing to not give them enough air.
Yeah, my friend has osteosarcoma, and he has those two forms, and they have to, like,
so they did go in and do palliative surgery. How's he doing? Is there any chance?
He's had cancer since I was in high school, and he's, like, younger than me.
Wow.
He's like, it's amazing he's still alive.
It is amazing he's still alive.
He's in college now, so he's doing pretty well, right?
Really? Is he really?
Great. It's been a long time.
That's amazing. That's absolutely good. Okay, effects of cancer. Certainly, tumors destroy viable tissue. Okay. If you don't have a lung, you're not going to be able to breathe very well. Okay. Bladder could be a problem. There's nothing to hold. Bladder tumors are big. You can't hold urine. Ovarian cancer, uterine cancer, all these things. So they definitely affect the function. And they cause hemorrhaging, they cause anemia, they cause all sorts of problems. They used to call it the wasting disease, because anorexia is very common. I want you to start looking with that word anorexia. It simply means an unexplained weight loss. Okay? So don't think it necessarily has to do with a
psychological
issue. Right. It very well may not. If someone is anorexic, that term among health professionals does not mean that they have anorexia nervosa. Right. I know in the common populace it does. Anorexia is a common symptom. Right. Unexplained weight loss is usually the first thing that often brings people to the health care. We call them cachectic. Do you have a word? Kind of a cool word. I like it.
You might see it. Now, just what a cachectic person. C-A-C-H-E-S-I-C-cachectic. Skin and bones. And remember, it used to be called a wasting disease. So you see them and
I can spot a cancer victim. Walking down the road, no cancer. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Granted, there are lots of other things that cause this, but the cancer is probably the most dramatic, and the weight loss can be sudden. We heard on Thursday night, and who met that diabetic? Yeah. Thank goodness that wasn't cancer. Can you quickly tell the students what?
Yeah, he was 18 years old, and he came in because he was having
But had I been into the ER, I would have got cancer. So, you guys like you have diabetes. Type 1, I'm done. So now we're looking like him every time. But in fact, he actually presented it, like a cancer, to me. Which is why we go to the ER and we have all these little tests and we can find out it's not cancer, it's diabetes. That's all. Tiredness is another symptom. The body goes through a lot to try to destroy the neoplasm. The body works really hard. The other thing the body experiences is pain. Okay? There's pain that pushes from the growing tumor that just pushes on the nerves. So it's not uncommon to have pain. Also, chemotherapy is can cause a lot of pain, as can radiation therapy. Right? So cancer is very painful. I read somewhere that virtually all cancer patients say that their pain is never gone. They simply move the enduring pain of their life. Which is actually a horrible thing to think about. Talked about stress, physiological stress, psychological stress. What about the psychological stress? Big time, right? Body image concern? Think about it. Fear, grief, anger, guilt, that they're going to die in your family. That's just huge. And is it just affecting the body and the person who has it? It's the saddest thing to watch someone who is not in pain, everything's fine. Maybe they've had a little problem with their bowel. Maybe they just look like nothing big. And they walk in perfectly fine, and they go through this huge resection that's just these colorectal cancer patients. Huge resection, they got most of their colon, they come out with a colostomy, and completely debilitated. And then they go to have their chemo, and then they're doing, and they never, that's healthy, that's a good one. And for a nurse, that's done. But it's not all in common. Because the treatment can be so debilitating. And the problems with the treatment can last the last time. So it's huge. So just because people are surviving cancer, there's still a lot of room for medicine. Much more than for medicine, in my opinion. There's some grading of cancers. When a person is diagnosed with cancer, they call them now you have an oncologist, you have a radiologist, you have a special oncologist, you have got all these doctors. And they get together and they say, in general, hold what's called a tumor board. They sit down and decide how we're going to attack this cancer. Okay? Before they do that, they need lots of information. They've done biopsies. They may have even done some exploratory surgery. They've done all the lab tests. They know where this cancer is. There are several different grading scales, and they have to do with cellular growth and function. So just regular, it's called grading, is a classification on a grade scale of 1 to 4. At least malignant versus the fourth is the most aggressive. Staging is what you'll see here in this area. Let's say, what stage is it? So stage 1 cancer is when it's just confined to the organ. Stage 2 is when it's gone beyond the walls of the organ, but not into the liver. So we can see that cellularly in the resection, they look at the tissue. See, it hasn't, I mean, they take the nodes, you know, it hasn't gone anywhere. But cellularly, they can see it's broken through, that there's no invasion anywhere, there's no metastasis. Stage 3, there is metastasis, similar. The found of cancer in a significant number. So there's a large possibility that there's been some metastasis, although there's no other organs that present that are involved. And stage 4 is when it's absolute metastasis, whether it be invasion or metastasis of the liver. So the first thing when someone says that their family member has cancer, the first person I'm going out is what's the stage. And there's something in breast cancer that's used too called I think in Zitzi. Okay, I am. Okay, that's the best. Those cancers have like a 99.9%
Intact.
Tiny little tumor intact. No big deal. Outpatient, you go in and do that. So when someone says to me I have breast cancer, I don't get very excited at all. So don't, it's very important. And of course, what's the general public view? Right? Yeah. Well, and it's insisting, truly, it's outpatient beliefs. But what is, does a woman think that way? Who has it? No. If I had it, would I think that way? No. Even me. I'd be going, oh my God. Right? But professionally, there's a huge difference between whether it's an insistent or it's a surgeon. So it's very, very important. And there are some cancers that get to stage four, people don't even know they got it. I'll never forget, I was looking as a unit clerk in a diagnostic imaging department, and I thought I might want to be a nurse. I kind of thought I could be down in the hospital and feel about that. And there was a physician in the back room, and he had been here for a long time. This is when the x-rays weren't on computers. They actually took the x-ray and they looked at him in the screen. He did it quite a while, and I was kind of wondering about it, so I walked out and back and said, even more. And he was like, okay. And just really, and this, obviously, part of our mission is just so horribly depressed and just impacted. And I said, okay, and he goes, look at this. And I looked at his x-ray, and I said, I'm sorry, I didn't know. And you can see all these white spots. It's a bone scan. Because the scan, so that's like a full body. The body looks like this, and it's just an x-ray. It's that big of the body. And there are all these little white dots around. And I said, yeah. See those little dots? And I said, well, those are cancers. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this man watching me. You do not have to tell him he's not like these. So yes, yeah, sometimes it's amazing how people think they're okay. They're getting older, you have enough energy, you know, and then finally, they've lost some weight, finally someone tells them they should go in the hospital. You know. And that's really not an issue, just even easy. There's also the T and M. So we have our stages, four stages, right? Got those? You will need to know those because I will ask you on the exam, I will tell you a scenario and ask you a stage question. So make sure you know how to do that. Talk it up between yourself. Another way to that you may see in your travels is a TNM staging system, which stands for TNM, tumor nodes and metastasis are each staged. Okay, so we have a number for the tumor and a number for the nodes. And no written number for the metastasis is either 0 or 1. Yes. So you may run into that kind of staging system. It kind of differs regionally, geographically, throughout the country. Different cancer centers use different staging systems. So you may run into anything. We do a lot of cytologic. We look at the cells a lot. And histologic cells. In cancer, we're always looking at the cells. I was in one cancer surgery. I remember they're taking nodes and they're sending them to the lab, just like that. Taking out, sending them. And we were waiting there with this whole abdomen open while waiting for the lab results to come back. Because the physician didn't want to close them up until he was sure that they'd gotten it off. So we'd go 5 minutes out, send it, wait 10 minutes, go another 5 minutes, and this went on and on like for 2 hours. Because he did not want to close up that person until we were sure we'd gotten to the end. And eventually, you close them up, and the prognosis was not good. But it really, you have to see where all the others are. So cancer's tough. A lot of tests. We do sonograms. There's Also did imaging, nuclear imaging, like the one I was talking about, the full body scans, there's CTs, there's MRIs, there's direct visual imaging, you know, the film that actually look at the cancer, all sorts of things that go into diagnosing cancer, as well as lab tests. Lab tests for sure. With the white count. So you see, all this goes together with the information that's taken to the tumor board in those places. There are times when they may decide to do nothing. When would you decide not to treat? I don't know. Because people like to follow medical advice. Like this lady. Who said, and there's a test, and so she said, get out to go online and have a test. Nurses said, you need to stop. You don't have to do that. Stop. You don't have to treat. You don't have to treat. Why would you want to put your 91-year-old mother through radiation? Really? But the doctor said, you don't say it quite that. Roughly, you don't say, why would you want to put your mother there? He said, why don't you find your option? Well, yeah, the doctor said we should go and have radiation. Are you aware of how tough that could be anymore? No, really? So it's our job to kind of, we're not fighting the disease, we're looking out for the person. So certainly there are times when you wouldn't treat. We'll talk about that a little more in this scenario. Okay, so there's chemo, right? There's radiation. The role of chemo is cytotoxic medications to cure liquid and solid cancers, meaning they're cancers of the blood, which don't fit into our staging systems, do they? Liquid cancers. Lymph cancers. We can't fit them into our staging system. We use chemotherapy for them. Why is chemotherapy effective? Yeah, and what it disrupts the cell cycle, correct? Physiologically, that's what it does, micro.
Systemic.
It's systemic, correct? Why is it most effective?
It's just a toxin.
It's a toxin, yes. Eliminates it, right? What kind of cells are targeted by chemo? Rapidly dividing cells. So why do the cancer victims lose their hair? Hairs grow fast. Hairs grow fast. Hairs on the body. So we lose it. What other tissues have that body put? Hence they have a lot of gastrointestinal. A mouth, a lot of brush. Because our mouth is constantly moving itself. So this is what you see, and this is what oncology nurses is careful. The cases of thrush and the hair loss and the body loss. Well, that's, yeah, you're right. And it can be used to prevent, sometimes we need to prevent it. We think that there might be cancer, so we keep giving care. Sometimes we just give it to shrink the tumor prior to the surgery. It's a lot of different cases. And we give it to care. So chemotherapy is used for many different reasons. Maybe it's just palliative. All sorts of different kinds of chemotherapy that we're not going to go into. And there are phases in which it works that we're not going to go into. We do surgery too, right? I'll talk a little bit about that. We do prophylactic surgery, like we discussed with the lung cancer victims. We also do a lot of resection. We simply remove the organ. In general, there's a physician that does a lot of neobladders. We take out the bladder and put it in the neobladder. Cool. And the whole bladder. Colorectal cancer, so it's familiar with that. Breast cancer, it's familiar with that. Lung, you know, the person. So surgery plays a huge role in cancer. It used to be our only treatment. Your great-grandfather's, my grandfather's, that was the only treatment available. And we've evolved so much. So there's radiation, isn't there? What's radiation like? Anybody have any ideas? You know what that said?
Nothing.
Pardon me?
Nothing.
Do nothing?
No, I feel nothing.
Do nothing?
No, I don't feel anything.
You don't feel anything? Well, you don't feel anything while it's happening?
Yeah.
You may not feel anything while it's happening. Radiation is ionizing radiation of gamma rays and X-rays, triggered at the tumor to kill it. Reduce its size, possibly decrease the pain, reduce obstruction. Again, radiation might be done before surgery. And then there's internal radiation. What's that? How can we do that? We implant radioactive rods in the body so that they can be let down the cancer. For instance, you cervical cancer. In the vagina, we can implant rods. Stay there for 2 days. That's a radiation treatment. They then expose the cervix to the radiation that they get.
What would tell, like, if you're
doing
radiation versus
chemo? Hence the chemo board. That's when they take all the tests, they sit down and design a plan of care. And then they come in en masse and kind of present the intervention.
Does it have anything to do with the type of cancer?
Absolutely, everything. All these factors are brought in. And all these physicians and specialists and tests, and that's why you generally don't see a diagnosis of cancer in immediate treatment because it takes a few days. The treatment within 2 weeks is usually about as quick as you're going to see, unless it's like a slam dunk, you know. Because you have to figure out what you're going to do. There's so many factors. What's the best research? What's the research that wasn't here yesterday that's here today? You know, the science is moving on. So that's why they take it very seriously. So then what are we going to do? Plan of action for this patient. This is how we want to approach this cancer. Radiation is certainly not without tremendous side effects. You're well aware of some of the side effects of chemo, right? What is the side effects of chemo? Hair loss, don't go back.
Nausea.
Nausea, about the pez again. Right, you're killing me. Yeah. What about radiation? What do we do with radiation? Think about what we're doing. Killing tissue, right? Okay, so if I have a breast tumor, what's going to happen to all my tissue on my chest? Exactly. It's a burn. Yeah. There's actual burns on people's skin when they do it. And even if it's not external, it's not uncommon for people internal. And also all the structures in the way. Between when that radiation goes in and the tumor effect. So radiation is a powerful, powerful treatment with tremendous side effects. So please know that. It's huge. It causes a lot of damage and saves a lot of lives. So it's kind of like the ultimate natogenic process in my opinion. Let's see. Biotherapy modifies the biological process that results in malignant cells. We see more and more of this. All sorts of therapies to halt the limit of the disease. So there's some biotherapies that are now becoming mainstream. Let's see. Talking a little bit about the heart that I don't necessarily want to go into. And spinal cord compression, all the side effects and heart. So what's our goal as nurses? What do we want to do with these people? What's our role? Pardon me?
Advocate.
Advocate. What else do you do? Yeah, we interact with them therapeutically. Absolutely. We use all our therapeutic communication tools. And what's our goal with our communication? What are we talking about? Yeah, helping with daily coping mechanisms, absolutely, because what are they coping with? A chronic disease. Mm-hmm. And think about people who've been cured. Okay, I'm cured of cancer, right? Mm-hmm. I've been cancer-free for 5 years now, considered out of the worst. There's people in this, never considered out of the worst, as far as I'm concerned. You know, people often think, it's been 5 years, I'm fine, you know? I'm fine, you know. And maybe it won't be that cancer. Maybe something else, because your body tends to do this. It'll kill you. So what are cancer victims walking around with? When's the next cancer coming? They live their entire lives worrying about the next cancer. So yeah, a lot of communication, a lot of support from nurses. And then what about their families? Do they understand everything we've talked about this morning? Do you think the physicians tell them about all the side effects? What's the physician's job? Diagnose and eradicate the disease. Right? Yeah, it's our job. And we're putting out. Which in oncology is huge. Huge. You see people live their lives like this. So there's a lot of work to be done. Anxiety, obviously, body image, anticipatory breathing. You have all this risk for infection. And that's pretty low. Nutrition, obviously, imbalanced nutrition. Because you're having chemo, do they want to eat? No, they're vomiting all the time. Okay, so who steps in then? The nurse, in consultation with the dietitian. Getting a handle on this? Yeah, it's fascinating. Please know that it's very, very much a part of medical surgical nursing. Even though we're not oncology nurses, we do a lot with cancer victims, and we can do a great amount of good. So now all the